Nadayanam namaskritya naramche gandharottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, chapter entitled The Son of Drona Punished. Text number 1. Shonaka uvarcha nirgate narade suta bhagavan badarayana shrutavams tat api pretam tathakim akarod vibhu. Shonaka, Sri Shonaka, Uvarcha, said, Nirgate, having gone, Narade, Narad Muni, Suta, O Suta, Bhagavan, the transcendentally powerful, Badarayana, Veda Vyas, the Shrutavan, who heard, Tat, his, Api Pretam, desire of the mind, Tata, thereafter, Kim, what, Akarot, did he do? Vipu, the great. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Rishi Shonaka asked, O Sutta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadeva heard everything from Sri Narad Muni. So after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadeva do? Translation responsibly. Rishi Shonaka asked, O Sutta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadeva heard everything from Sri Narad Muni. So after Narad's departure, what did Vyasadeva do? Purport. In this chapter, the clue for describing Srimad Bhagavatam is picked up as Maharaj Parikshit is miraculously saved in the womb of his mother. This was caused by Droni Ashwatthama, Acharya Drona's son, who killed the five sons of Draupadi while they were asleep, for which he was punished by Arjuna. Before commencing the great epic Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Vyasadeva realized the whole truth by trance in devotion. Omagyan timanandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai Sri Gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Pichitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama,
Hare Rama, Hare Hare. This is the beginning of the seventh chapter of the first canto. the seventh chapter was called The Son of Drona Punished. In the beginning of the chapter, for the first 10 verses or so, there is a description by Sukadeva Goswami of Srila Vyasadeva becoming self-realized before writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in chapters 4, 5 and 6, we've seen that Vyasadeva has been instructed by Narada that the reason he's feeling incomplete is because he has not written the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is unique even amongst all the Vedic literatures. And by this time, Srila Vyasadeva has written all of the Vedic literatures. So he compiled the what we call the Shruti and the Smriti. The Shruti means the philosophical parts of the Vedas, which are said to emanate directly from the Lord's breathing himself. And then there is the Smriti, which is the remembrances, which is the Puranas, the Itihasas, the histories, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, like that. So he has compiled all of the literatures, but still he is feeling incomplete. So that shows that the Bhagavatam is unique, because it is only the Bhagavatam which makes Vyasa feel completely satisfied at heart, that he has elaborated upon the absolute truth in a pure and unadulterated way. So what sets the Bhagavatam apart from all other scriptures? Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranam, Amalam, Yad, Vaishnavanam, Priyam. 12th canto of the Bhagavatam says, at the end of the Bhagavatam, says this is Amala Purana. Now why is it Amala? Amala means pure. It is a pure Purana. Why is it pure? Because pure devotional service to Krishna is discussed within the Bhagavatam. It is not purely discussed or exclusively discussed in the other literatures. All the other Vedic literatures, they are Nishtraiguna, Bhavarjuna. They are contaminated by the three modes of nature to some degree. Whereas the Bhagavatam is said to be Amala, which means it is free from the effect of the modes of nature. Even though it appears sometimes the modes of nature are described within the Bhagavatam, and they are described within the Bhagavatam, but it is all in relation to pure devotional service, and that is the difference. For example, you'll see in the fourth canto, the opening pastime is the Daksha Jyagya. So Daksha is obviously under the effect of the modes of nature, because he curses Shiva. And the entire pastime is about not committing Vaishnava Aparad. One will commit Vaishnava Aparad when one is influenced by the lower modes of nature. If you're too much in ignorance, if you're too much in passion, you will commit offences to devotees. That's why Srila Prabhupada says in the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, he says that the whole purpose of this book is to raise someone from the mode of ignorance, from the mode of passion, to the mode of goodness. And sometimes devotees, they say, why is it that we place emphasis on the mode of goodness when we are interested in pure goodness or pure devotional service? But the mode of goodness is necessary. Prabhupada himself says, and in the beginning of the Nectar of Instruction, he says that you must rise first in the mode of goodness if you want to attain pure devotional service. You can't get to pure devotional service, which is called Shuddha Sattva, from the platform of ignorance or passion. Right? You can perform devotional service in the mode of ignorance and passion, as quite often many of us do a lot of the time. But it is less effective. And this is spoken about by Kapila Dev in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. He says you can do devotional service in the mode of passion, in the mode of ignorance, but you won't get as much effect, and you won't get the ultimate effect. If you just remain passionate, right, too active, you see, devotees are too passionate, too active in devotional service means that they're so fixed on their goal that they tend to commit offences to other devotees, because they tend to push them out of the way while they're trying to get to their goal, because it's their goal. Right. So in the description of Kapiladeva of the modes of nature and devotional service under the modes of material nature in the third canto, interesting that he says devotional service in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, both of them produce anger towards other devotees. So it's an interesting analysis. He says it both times in both categories. You get too much passionate and you're too fixed on your own service, But that's not actually the mood of a pure devotee. When Prabhupada was asking the devotees to draw the pictures, the artwork for his books, then one of the devotees presented a picture, a painting to Prabhupada, where the gopis were pushing Radha, Srimati Radharani, towards Krishna. And Prabhupada said, yes, actually this is the mood in the spiritual world. The spiritual world devotees are pushing other devotees towards Krishna, not trying to be prominent, or not trying, like, I'm doing my service, you know, I've got my garland, which I've made for Krishna, out of 7 different flowers, which everyone in the spiritual world does, right? In the material world, we make it out of, you know, rose and carnation, right? Or a few different colours, which is nice. It is nice. But in the spiritual world, 7 different types of flowers. And these are the most fragrant and aromatic and beautiful flowers in creation. So they make their flowers, the beautiful garlands, and they present it. But the devotees don't. You know, they don't make a garland. Then, okay, now I'm going to offer it to Krishna. Or maybe to Radharani also, like that. Krishna and Radha, and yeah, just Krishna and Radha. Right? So I'm fixed. So then I'll go towards Krishna and Radharani with my garland, and that's not the mood in the spiritual world. The mood in the spiritual world: someone makes a garland, but then they present it to their guru. And when you go to the spiritual world, your guru will be present, and all of the disciplic succession will be present, and we will be assisting them in service to Radha and Krishna. So then you go towards the spiritual master and you say, you know, my dear friend. In the spiritual world, the relationship becomes more one of friendship as opposed to guru-disciple, but always you feel in the mood of assistant, like that. You say, my dear friend, I've made this beautiful garland for Radha and Krishna. Could you please offer it to Radha and Krishna? And then the guru will take it to the next personality, his guru, and then they will pass it to Radha and Krishna. And then it will come to the principal assistants. You'll see on the altar in Mayapur, you'll see the principal assistants. Sudevi, Rangadevi, Induleka, Vishaka, Tungavija, Chitra, Champakalata, Lalita, right? So then they will pass it to the principal assistants. And sometimes the principal assistants will turn around and they'll give the garland back to you. And they'll say, you offer it to Radha and Krishna directly. Right? And then your hairs stand on end. Right? I'm going to offer the garland to Radha and Krishna. Like, what fortune. What a blessing. So then they say, you directly. And then you offer it. You put it over Krishna's neck. Or you put it over Radha's neck. But generally, we offer it in as an assistant. That's why Mahaprabhu says, Gopi Bhatu Pada Kamala Yo Dasa Dasa Anudasa. I am the servant of the servant. So that is pure devotional service. Now, when a devotee gets into the mode of goodness, right, that's the way a devotee starts feeling. Not that I'm pushing myself forward to be prominent or going past devotees or knocking other devotees out of the way, but rather I'm trying to assist them to become Krishna's servants. That's the mood, actually, in the spiritual world. While we're in the mode of passion, while we're in the mode of ignorance, we become affected by the modes of nature. Mode of ignorance, devotees are generally angry a lot. You'll see people who are angry a lot, that's the mode of ignorance. And what's the effect? The effect is you'll commit offences. And that's what happens. You commit offences to the devotees. And when you commit offences to the devotees, it hampers your spiritual progress. Very hard to make advancement when you're continuously offending Krishna's devotees. And in the mode of passion, you just become too fixed in what you're doing. Too interested in, I am the biggest book distributor. Right? I am the best pujari. I am the best cook. I am the best class giver. I am the best preacher. And we get caught up in our own mentality. So when you get to the mode of goodness, then you'll start showing a different type of bhakti or devotional service. So what is the Bhagavatam teaching? Why is it different to the other shastras? Because exclusively it is showing that we must become a pure devotee of Krishna. So when you see pastimes which are not showing pure devotional service, they're showing the opposite thing. Why is that? It is to contrast. Just like if you explain to someone what is black, what's the best way to explain what is black? If you want to show someone what is black or what is the colour or what is the shade of black, what is the best way to explain it to someone?
Comparison to white.
Yeah, you have to compare it to white. Right? You have to contrast it. Right? You say, okay, here's black. How do I understand what is black? Because here's white. You put them next to each other. Oh, now I understand. Right? So in order to explain what is pure devotional service, sometimes you'll say what is not pure devotional service in the Bhagavatam. Just a contrast. Yeah? Because what happens to Daksha? He offends Shiva. What is the lesson? The lesson is don't judge devotees externally. Right? You just look at the externals and say, oh, these devotees are wearing saffron, so they're all pretenders. Right? But that's external. Right? In Kali Yuga, people think, oh, people wear saffron, they must be pretending. No one can actually wear saffron in Kali Yuga, so they're all pretenders. That's external. You have to see what is actually in the heart. And how do you understand what's in the heart? Because you'll see by their words, by their actions, what do they do? Then you'll understand. Are they qualified or not? Right? And then you may judge, well, someone's wearing white. So they're obviously a sense enjoyer. They're obviously attached to the material, but that's external. You look at His Grace Burujan Prabhu, he wears white. Right? He still has a wife. Right? So does that mean he's just a sense enjoyer? No. Then you have to look, what are the words? What are the actions? So the Bhagavatam is teaching pure devotional service. Right? And if we see something that is otherwise than pure devotion, so it is just accentuating that. So this is what sets the Bhagavatam apart, this point. That it is describing pure devotional service to Krishna. Now, what is the second thing that sets the Bhagavatam apart from all the other shastras? Is that it is primarily glorifying the supreme personality of Godhead. The original personality of Godhead, that is Krishna in Vrindavan. So that is the Bhagavatam's purpose. It is to glorify above all other incarnations. Because many of the other shastras, many of the other Vedic scriptures, they also glorify Krishna. And Brahma Vaivarta Purana and Padma Purana are full of description of Krishna's pastimes. It's not that Srila Vyasadeva not written about Krishna. Krishna was written about. Right? Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Padma Purana, Hari Vamsa, right? Mahabharata even. Krishna's spoken about extensively already. So then what sets this one apart? No, it is Krishna in Vrindavan. Even Krishna was spoken about Vrindavan in the other Purana. Like Brahma Vaivarta Purana gives many pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. Padma Purana also. And even about Radharani. I mean, they're spoken about. But it is the mood in which we approach them. To approach this Swayam Bhagavan, to approach this particular form of God, it is not so easy. So therefore the Bhagavatam trains us how to approach this particular form of God. Because you'll notice when you look around ISKCON, all over the world, you'll see who did Prabhupada install on the altar, which deities. You go all over ISKCON and you look at all the deities that Prabhupada installed. Who did he install? Like, where did Prabhupada install deities in Australia? Right? In Sydney and in Melbourne, right? And then over in New Zealand, in Auckland. Right? So who did Prabhupada install in those temples? Gaunatai, yeah. And who else? Has anyone been to any of the temples in Australia? Yeah, Radha Balava, Radha Gopinath, and Radha Giridhari. Right? And then if you go around the world, Radha Landinishwara, Radha Parashishwara, Radha Rasabihari, Radha Madhava, Radha Shamasundara, right? All over the world, Prabhupada, Rukmini Dwarkadish, he called them in like that. But you'll see the deities are Radha and Krishna. Right? This is who Prabhupada installed, not Lakshmi Narayan. Right? Or even in South India, he installed Radha Krishna. In the Mumbai temple in Juhu, then he installed Radha Rasabihari, and then which altar? They're on the third altar or the middle altar? They're on the middle altar, and Sitaram Lakshman and Hanuman are on the final altar. Okay, so then he put them as the prominent personalities, even though Lord Ram is more popular than Krishna in India, and he is on the final altar. Because the devotees are especially attracted to Lord Ram. But still, in the temple, he put Radha and Krishna on the middle altar. And which form of Krishna? Krishna from Vrindavan. As is worshipped in our tradition, in the Gaudiya tradition, Krishna holding the flute next to Radha. Radha Balava. That's who we install. Now, this is a very intimate, or it's the most intimate form of God, which the Bhagavatam is emphasizing, this most intimate form of God. Now, in order to realize or to worship that intimate form of God, it requires study of the Bhagavatam to become purified. Because at this point in time, Srila Prabhupada says, we are worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Because all of the forms of Krishna, Krishna is avatari, all of the forms of Krishna are within that form of Radha and Krishna. All of the different avatars. So Lakshmi and Narayan are within that form. And we worship Radha Krishna, not with pure spontaneous rag at this point in time, but very much in the mood of awe and reverence. That is our mood when we're approaching Radha and Krishna. So we are worshipping them, but the mood is with... So how do we transform from worshipping them with awe and reverence to worship them in the mood of Vrindavan, on the mood of rag, as is being taught in the Bhagavatam? That requires great purification. That requires the chanting of the holy name and the study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavat Vidhi Marg. That will open up the worship of Radha Krishna. It's not easy to get to them in that particular form. Burujan Prabhu said to me one time that because Prabhupada has given us this and we're trying to get the highest thing, and Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada is doing all of this under the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, under his direction. Because we're trying to get to the highest thing, it will require the greatest endeavor and the most intense purification. Hands up if you find sometimes devotional life is intense. Wow. There's the Melbourne temple. Melbourne Mahaprabhu and you. If you want an easier life, it is available. You can go to other temples. It is easier like that. I've been to other temples. It's different here. It's special here. It's intense. It's like getting close to the fire. Because if you want to get purified, you have to get close to the fire. Like that. If you want to purify the metal, make it unalloyed, because we want unalloyed devotional service, you have to go deep into the fire. That's what this is. Radha Balaba, their mood is quite different. I've been to many temples in our movement, but Radha Balaba's mood is quite different. Their mood is intense. Right? Extremely sweet and extremely intense. And Burujan Prabhu always describes this is what Vrindavan is like. It is extremely sweet, but it is extremely intense. When we go to Vrindavan, that's what it's like. You go to Vrindavan in this world, it's extremely sweet, but it can be extremely intense. And what do you think it's like in the spiritual world? What do you think it's going to be like when you get back there? Extremely sweet and extremely intense. That's what it's like. Because it's like that every day in the spiritual world. It's intense. All the devotees are together. In the midday pastimes, you read in Krishna's Ashtakaliya Leela, the devotees come together every day at Radha Kund, which is the center of the spiritual world. Krishna just comes with all of his gopis and he's just performing pastimes. Extremely sweet. They're just lost in ecstasy. Everyone is just in ecstasy. They have Rasa Leela on the bank of Radha Kund. They do Julan Yatra, like that. Flute stealing pastimes. Now they steal the flute and then Krishna has to find the flute. Dice, gambling, like having bets like this. Jal Kaili means water pastimes, you know, fighting, water fighting. They all get, and holy, they all get the colours out. They all start springing the colours on each other. So sometimes having Jal Kaili, Radha and Krishna having big water battle. Right? Krishna versus all the Sakis. So then Krishna, and Krishna wins. Right? Because Krishna is Krishna, he's very hard to defeat. So then he wins. And then Radharani, she's defeated. And then what happens? The whole of Radhakund just goes silent. Right? No one says Jai. When Radharani wins, everyone goes Jai Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. But when Krishna wins, everyone just goes silent. Right? So it is incredibly ecstatic, right? It is, they're just over flooded with ecstasy. But then, suddenly, some parrots fly in to Radha Kund, right? And they begin to say, Jatila, 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 like that, and then everyone becomes overwhelmed with anxiety. Radharani's mother-in-law is on her way, right? So that everyone just jumps up and they just run in every direction, right? Everyone just enters into the forests. Radharani goes to Surya Kund, which is not far from Radha Kund. She goes to Surya Kund and she begins to do Surya Puja, worship the sun god, because that's where she's supposed to be. So Jatila comes along, and she sees Radharani is doing the puja. Oh, very nice, Radharani is very well behaved, very good daughter-in-law, like that. But then the anxiety continues, because then Radha and Krishna, after that pastime, they are separated. So everything becomes very intense. Radharani, her life almost finishes, just because she cannot see Krishna. Right? How do we feel when we can't see Radha Balabha? Does our life almost end? Do you go to crossways? Devotees have to carry you up. They carry the prasadam up the stairs, and then they carry Johnny up the stairs. Put him on the couch. In the spiritual world, Radharani is on, they make a bed of lotus flowers, and then they put a silk cloth over the top of the lotus flowers. As soon as Radharani goes onto that silk cloth, she lays down. When she's feeling separation from Krishna, she is so her heat from her body is so intense, all the lotus flowers, they just dry and become like dried flowers immediately, just from Radharani's intense separation. And all of the devotees who are serving Radharani, because they are feeling, they are identifying with her feeling of separation, because she is feeling separation, they feel separation. They cannot stand to see her like that. So therefore, they become overwhelmed with these feelings. So it is intense. And then later in the day, they become united again. Then sometimes, or every evening, there's a big festival in Nandagram. And Nandagram is in, it's where Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, lives. So every evening there is a big festival. It starts about 8:30 in the evening. So all the devotees come from all around Braj to go to Nanda Maharaj's court to attend the festival, a big festival. So there is dancing, there is singing, there is dramas. This is all for Krishna's pleasure. So then Vrishabhanu Maharaj and Kirtida, they can also come sometimes for the festival in the evening. So sometimes they bring Radharani also, or they bring Radharani whenever they come. So Radha, she also comes. So then sometimes, because Radharani is not seeing Krishna for a significant amount of time of that day, and then finally she gets to come and be with Krishna once again. And then sometimes it describes in the Nectar of Devotion that Krishna dresses as a sakhi, as a gopi. And then he's just wandering throughout the crowd. So many devotees are there. So then Radharani comes in with Kirtida and Vrishabhanu, and Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are there to welcome everyone. So Nanda Maharaj and Vrishabhanu Maharaj are embracing each other, and Kirtida and Mother Yashoda are embracing each other. And then Radharani is standing there, and then this young gopi, Krishna dressed as a young gopi, he comes up and he says, "Oh, Radhika, you have come to our home. You have come, not to our home, but you have come to, how wonderful. Let me embrace you, my dear friend." So then he grabs Radharani and begins to embrace her in front of everyone. And Radharani is just turning red. She cannot believe it. What is he doing? Yeah? This person is mad. You know, who would do this in front of their parents in Vedic culture? You know, who would dress up as a woman in Vedic culture and then go and embrace another woman in front of, you know, it's unheard of. So this is the kind of the intensity. So then the sweetness and intensity, they are increasing continuously. This is why Krishna is called Rasa Raj or Rasika Shekhar. He increases the intensity and the sweetness of the pastimes continuously, intense. So that's what it's like in the spiritual world. It is intense, but it is sweet, like that. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us actually this, pure devotional service. Pure devotional service to Krishna, the original form of God, in Vrindavan. Now what does it mean? To get to Krishna, the original form of God in Vrindavan, as the Bhagavatam is teaching, you have to perform tivrena bhakti yogena. Intense devotional service. It has to be intense. There's no other way to get to Krishna. It has to be intense. And what does it mean for it to be intense down here on earth? Because we're a long way away from Vrindavan at this point in time. So what does it mean to get to Krishna? What does it mean for it to be intense? Right? It means that you have to take responsibility for spreading the Sankirtan movement. You take responsibility. It is your responsibility that everyone in this world becomes Krishna conscious. So that's intense. That takes a lot of work. That means you're going to have to shed, as Prabhupada says, gallons and gallons of blood just to make one devotee. Actually, Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said that. It takes gallons and gallons of blood, means so much of our effort just to make one devotee. Right? That's intense. It's an intense movement. Srila Prabhupada said, I think he said it in Melbourne, that you should go to the place where they're selling Krishna anxiety and you should buy as much as you can. Go and find where they're selling Krishna's anxiety and buy it as much as you can. And that's what Prabhupada was like. Just like Ramai Swami was telling us that I think 1974, that Australia was the top book distributing country in the world. I think it was 74 or 75, like that. So they became number one in the world, the Australian BBT party. They call it the BBT party because they merged all the temples together. So every devotee in Australia has put it under one score, and they defeated Los Angeles, they defeated the Radha Damodar Bus party, they defeated practically everyone. Maybe the Radha Damodar Bus party was just getting going, but they became number one in the world. German Yatra, they defeated everyone. So Prabhupada got the report. And then what did Prabhupada say when he got the report? He said, next year, double it. And all the devotees were just, Ramai Swami said, he was just like, anyway, the amount of effort they put in just to do that one year, like they just like everything practically they gave, and then Prabhupada said, double it. That's intense. Prabhupada was intense. I remember Tamal Krishnamurti said to us one time over there, might have been, you and I might have been both there, I can't remember, but he said he walked into the room, one, I think it was both of us there, because he wanted breakfast after class. So myself and Priya Bharata Prabhu and Radha Krishna Prabhu, three of us, he wanted fruits and other things for breakfast. So three of us spent the whole Bhagavatam class time, you know, instead of being in his class, we're in the kitchen cutting up fruits and making orange juice, which is really one person's job, you know. And it took three of us, because we were so intent on serving and pleasing our guru, it took three of us the whole Bhagavatam class to do that, like that. So I look back on those things and I can understand why he chastised us, because now that I look back on those, I think, you know, why would it take three people to do that? It's one person's job. It's only in half an hour's work, but anyway, we took three. So we spent the whole class doing it. So he walked in and then he became very heavy. He said, where were you? I think he's particularly pointing out Priya. I don't know if you remember, but because you were the senior, so you got the brunt. I was against the wall. Behind the door, I was just kind of. I thought my senior godbrothers were getting it, so that was okay for me on that occasion to accept that. So I was in the background, but I got the message and I got the point. And he said, "Why did it take three of you to do it?" And he actually said, "What is the purpose of your life?" I don't know if you remember that. He said, "What is the purpose of your life, Priya? What is the purpose of your life?" You know, heavy. It was heavy chastisement. So he really got on our case. And it was intense. Right? But then, I remember when he sat down and started taking prasadam and everything, and he said, do you think it was easy being with Prabhupada? Because he was trying, because sometimes devotees, they get chastised by the guru, especially these days. The guru just says one little thing and everyone's like, you know, maybe I'm in the wrong movement, you know, maybe I should leave, you know, maybe I shouldn't come near the guru. Maybe I should go to a different temple. You know, everyone gets so mental these days. You just get a little chastisement. But Tamal Krishnamurti, he was saying to us, he said, what do you think it was like being with Prabhupada? Do you think it was like all sweet and all spiritual and all like nectar? And you know. One time, Tamal Krishnamurti, he went to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, he was the GBC for India for 4 years. So Prabhupada spent about 9 months of those 4 years in India, but for 3 months each time, then he would travel around to different countries. So then Tamal Krishnamurti went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, logistically it's very difficult because you travel off for 3 months. We're here, you know, we're trying to build Mayapur, we're trying to build Vrindavan, trying to build Juhu, and we need checks signed because there was co-signings on the accounts. Tamal Krishnamurti's and Prabhupada's signature had to be on all the checks. So What Tamal Krishnamurti would do, he would like mail checks to Prabhupada. Like say Prabhupada was going from London to Germany, So it mailed to Germany when Prabhupada was in London. So hopefully when Prabhupada got to Germany, you know, the checks would meet. Prabhupada would sign them and send them back. So it was obviously a difficult and slow system. So then Tamal Krishnamurti went to Prabhupada one time and he said, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he said, why don't you just sign a few checks, you know, 10, 15, 30 checks, and just leave them here. So for those 3 months when you're away, then if I need to do anything, I can just sign the check and just... And Prabhupada just looked at him. And Prabhupada said, do you mind if I choose how to spend my money? Do you mind if I choose how to spend my money? Like that. Because Prabhupada didn't trust his disciples enough. At that point, they were just young devotees. He didn't trust them enough to give them, you know, checks, which they could just sign and just put wherever. So he was heavy. So Tamal Krishnamurti said he just paid his obeisances and he just backed out of the room and just left the room. So then he said to us, he said, do you think it was easy being with Prabhupada? Right? It was intense. Prabhupada was an intense personality. He was on a mission, so therefore it was intense. So devotional service, it is like that. It is intense in purification. To become purified, the Bhagavatam is teaching us to reach Krishna in that original form. You have to learn how to perform pure devotional service. And pure devotional service has to be tivrena bhakti. It has to be intense. It has to be focused. And that's why Krishna makes it intense. Because if you're serious about getting back to him, then he says, okay, if you say, sometimes we go before the deity and we say, Krishna, I just want you now. Right? I've had enough of this material world. I've been here for too long. I'm suffering too much. And I just want to surrender to you now. And Krishna says, really? And you say, yeah, Krishna, I just want to be your devotee now. I don't want anything else. And Krishna says, really? Like that. So then he says, okay, we'll test. We'll see. Is that what you really want? Is that what you really desire? And then Krishna begins to, okay, it's like in high jumping. You know, as soon as you jump one high, then they move the bar up. So then Krishna says, okay, we'll take it up a little bit more. Are you really serious about this? Right. And then you, okay, you handle that. And then Krishna says, okay, now you think, okay, now I've got to a good level. Just like sometimes in devotional service, you kind of think, okay, now I'm doing pretty well. You know, I've got the reputation now, everyone knows me. You know, they all come to my classes. You know, they like my kirtans. You know, when I walk around, everyone goes like, you know, like that. And you think, oh, now I'm starting to really get it together. So then you start thinking in your mind, oh, now I'm starting to get there. This is what it's about. You know, I'm obviously on the right track. I must be on the right track because this is what, you know, everything's falling into place. It's correct. So then Krishna says, is this really what it's about? Is this really what's in your heart? Are you really my devotee? Or is there another weed in there called pratishta? Is there a desire for recognition in there? So then Krishna, then he intensifies it once again. So every time that you make advancement, because you are making advancement, we're all making advancement. Every time you make some advancement, then Krishna intensifies it again. And then after some time, then you have to become humble and you have to become surrendered. Because whenever you think that you're becoming successful, then Krishna, he makes it more difficult for you. And that's the nature of devotional service. Because if you want to get to the ultimate thing, as the Bhagavatam is teaching us, you have to develop pure devotional service. And what is pure devotional service? Pure devotional service, as Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, happiness or distress. Victory or defeat, right? Honor or dishonor, right? Are you the same in all of those situations? Easy to be devoted when everything's good. So Krishna says, okay, how about some distress? Right? So okay, then you get into distress, and you think, okay, it's a material world. Everything passes. This will only last a week or two. And Krishna makes it go for 6 months. Right? Yeah, Krishna tests you. Are you serious or not? Right. And then, just at the end of that 6 months, then he relieves everything. You think, oh, great, it's all gone. And then it comes from another direction. Another 6 months. Right? And Krishna's testing it. Are you actually surrendered to me? Are you willing to serve me under any circumstance? Are you doing this for me? What is your motivation? Happiness and distress. Victory or defeat. Sometimes we preach and preach and preach. It seems like nothing happens. You know, if you look at Prabhupada, you know, nothing, you know, 30 years of preaching in India before he even got to the West, one disciple. Right? That's intense. Right? Then he became a sannyasi in 1959, and then 65 he comes to America. You look at 65, 66, 67, 68, the movement didn't grow very much. It was only 68, it was after 3 years of being in the West, that then it took off. He sent the first devotees to London, and that's when it really turned into a worldwide movement like that. But for the first 3 years, it was very slow. And if you look at the videos, I saw some videos, the old footage, you see the first Rath Yatra in 67 in San Francisco, it was a bunch of hippies. I mean, it really was. It was a bunch of hippies. I was listening the other day, Tamal Krishnamurti said that back in 67 or 68 when he joined in Hyde Ashbury in San Francisco, he said the temple was quite loose. It was quite, you know, it was the very beginning days. And he joined, and the next day one of the devotees said to him, he said, "Do you want to give class?" The day after he joined, he said, "What do I say?" And the devotee said, "Say anything." He said, "Just give class." So he gave class. That was the first day. And then he said there used to be a shop across the road from the temple. They used to go across the road to the shop, get 4 litres of strawberry ice cream, right? And they didn't even know it was bona fide. I mean, now that they think back to what the old days were. Because he was making a point in one of his classes. He said, everyone says, "Bring back the old days, bring back the old days." He said, "You don't really understand what the old days were like." Right? It was very loose in the very beginning. So they go across the road, get 4 litres of strawberry ice cream, come in front of the altar of Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, just put the whole tub in front of the altar, right, and just make an offering. Namo Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Vishnu. And then at the end of it, they'd just get it, and they'd go and sit inside the temple and just start eating the strawberry, and then eat 4 litres of strawberry ice cream. That was the beginning of our movement. Yeah, that's how it started. So the movement in the beginning, the point is that Krishna is testing us under all circumstances, happiness and distress, victory. So he's testing what is the motivation, what is our actual desire. So the Bhagavatam is leading us towards this. So devotional service, it must be intense, and it will be intense, and all of us will be purified in some way. And Krishna is expert, and he will purify all of us in some way. Sometimes we think, "Oh, this devotee needs purification." You know, sometimes we think, "Oh, that devotee really needs some purification." You know, and then we go to another devotee, you know, even a senior devotee, and we say, "You know, we're really going to say something to this devotee," which is true. That's what we should do. But we also have to have faith that Krishna will purify everyone. It's not only our business. We have to have faith that Krishna will purify everyone. All of us have anattas, all of us have defects. Krishna will remove those things if we're sincere. And we must be sincere to an extent, because we're here and we're trying to serve Krishna to the best of our ability. But if you really want to get purified, then you have to accept whatever Krishna gives over time. And Krishna will give all sorts of things. The best is yet to come. So stick around. Because in the beginning we just think it's going to just be cruisy for a long time. We just think our devotional is just going to be ecstatic. And it is ecstatic, but Krishna will test you also. Will you stay with me even when it's not so easily in the material world? Will you stay with me? Or do you reject me? Burajan Prabhu always says this. Watch your mind. Watch what your mind does, right? When you're in a happy situation and everything's good in Krishna consciousness, what does your mind do? Does it stay fixed on Krishna, or does it begin to relax and go other ways? And when it's in an intense situation or a distressful situation, what does your mind do? Does it surrender to Krishna? Does it focus on Krishna? Or does it take shelter of sex life or overeating or going for trips to exotic Southeast Asian countries where the weather's nice? And what does your mind do? So we have to test, what will our mind do? So this is something we have to examine in ourselves, because at the end of the day, there's only one person who we can hold responsible for going back to Godhead, and that's ourselves. It's up to us to get back to the spiritual world. We have to pass all the tests in due course of time. So we'll stop here, and let's see if there's any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
When we say, you know, happiness and distress, you know, fame, no fame,
Now we should be focused practically what does it mean. So when this distress comes, then obviously in my consciousness, we totally forget Krishna and we start thinking, I have to do this, this problem is coming. So what does it practically mean to be equipoised and
it means to maintain Krishna consciousness, to be thinking of Krishna. Prabhupada says that, he actually said, we read a purport last night, in the beginning of the sixth canto, and Prabhupada said, he actually says, the secret of success in spiritual life is that when you're going through these intense tests, you remember Krishna, or you surrender to Krishna. In other words, you even thank Krishna. Just like sometimes you hear His Holiness Radha Swami. Right, I hear sometimes when I hear, he meets a senior devotee and they say, how are you, Maharaj? And then he says, well, I have this problem or that problem. Like he had his gallbladder removed, I think, not so long ago. And, he has some health problems because he's getting older. But then I hear him say that I deserve much worse. But Krishna is very kind. He's just given me a small token. So that's what it means, is that when we're going through something intense or difficult, then we think in our mind that this is Krishna's mercy on me. He's testing me and he's making it difficult externally, but to see if my consciousness is still fixed on him. And the test is that we still pray to Krishna and we still take shelter of Krishna in our mind, even when things are externally becoming very difficult. So that should be our consciousness. So we have to see, do we react like that? I know for myself I don't always react like that. Sometimes when things are difficult, sometimes I do. I think of Krishna, I take shelter of Krishna, but other times I don't. The mind goes to other places, other options. So does that answer or help? Anyone else want to add something? Any other questions or comments? And Radha Krishna was there as well. It took three of us to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I look back at those things. Some of the things I did when I was, a new devotee. It's easy to understand why the guru gets upset.
Yeah.
Some of the things that we do. By the time I burnt the carpet in the. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, in the reception.
In the reception, yeah.
You put something in there.
The toaster.
You put the toaster on the carpet.
Yeah, because the reception used to have thick white carpet, like nice thick white carpet in the reception. So then Tamoka Shmaraj would give class, and then every morning he'd leave class, go into the dining room, and he'd want breakfast straight away. Anuruddha Prabhu and Korma Prabhu and about six devotees would come and eat with him. So then the first morning, I was in the kitchen, Priya Radha Prabhu was serving, and I was in the kitchen, and I'd make the toast, and then he'd want it hot. So then I'd run from the kitchen to the dining room, then I'd bring it in, put it on his plate. And, it's only like, it must be 10 seconds to get from there to there and put it on his plate, but every time I put it on his plate, he said, it's not hot. So then I just So the next day, then Priya Radha Prabhu said to me, well, then just put the toaster. Oh, that's right. He said, put the toaster in the dining room and, just make it in the dining room. And then, every time he wants toast, just virtually put it on his plate like that. So he finished class. I ran in, got the toast and the toaster and have everything ready to go. And it was toasting. And he walks in, he looks at me and he says, I don't want you popping in here. I don't want you popping in here. Toast popping up in my head. So I just, I was a new devotee and I was only about 20 years old at the time. So I just picked up the toaster, I just ran into the dining room, just plugged it into, put it on the floor, just plugged it into the wall, popped the toaster and just ran it straight in there. And he was happy because it was all hot. So everything went smooth. So then I went back after breakfast and picked up the toaster. And the bottom of the toaster, it sunk into the carpet, so the whole carpet was black. Beautiful white carpet was all black because and I just thought, oh my god, this is it. So I went to Aniruddha Prabhu and I told him, I said, I've put a nice black mark on the carpet. So obviously he wasn't so happy. And then I had to go and see my mother that day, and I told my mum what happened, and she said, you know, I don't know what happened to your brain. You know, I didn't. This is not the way I taught you to grow up. So I was just like, my mother's just completely destroyed my ego. And then my temple president was just like, so anyway, then that night we're serving to Mogesh Maharaj, and he's having puff rice and milk after evening class up in the darshan room. And then Aniruddha Prabhu's there, and Mogesh Maharaj's there, and Priya's serving them, and I'm sitting at the back. And then Aniruddha Prabhu said, oh, Keshava had an accident today. Mogesh Maharaj's like putting the puff rice in, and he just stops. Yeah, Keshava had an accident today, and he just stops. And he just looks at me, and he looks down, and he goes, what accident? Starts eating him. And then I'm just looking at Andy, because Tamoka Shimura's looking down, I'm looking at Andy Rupert, just going. just like, but he had me, you know, he had me like, you know, where he wanted me. Sometimes the rush you have with devotees, particularly senior devotees, sometimes, you know. Like, so he had me, so then I'm looking at him like, you know, and he just said, oh yeah, he put the toaster on the carpet.
He was laughing.
Oh yeah, he was having a good time. What's that? Yeah, he was having a good time. He enjoyed the hole. So then he said, oh, Keshava, you know, put a black mark on the carpet. So Tamogesh Maharaj, he wouldn't look at me, but he knew that I was looking at him, and he knew what was going on, because he's very intelligent and sensitive, and he was a rasa achari himself, so he was just deepening the rasa. So he wouldn't look at me, but he kept looking at Aniruddha, and then he kept looking down, and then once in a while he'd just like look at me, and then, you know, I was going on Aniruddha like, you know, like this, and then when he looked at me I'd just go, you know, and then he'd look back in, and I'm just like, stop, you know. So then he kept going, and then Tamakrishma started saying, so what do you think we should do? He said, I think we have to replace the whole carpet. You know, the whole room. He said, maybe you should go out and start collecting for it tomorrow. You know, it's obviously going to cost thousands of dollars to do it. And he said, do you think we should all go down there and have a look now? And I'm just like, oh my God. My life was just, you know, completely degenerate. So anyway, at the end of it, he got up at the end after they had the conversation, and they had destroyed me like that. He just got up and just walked past me and just looked at me and said, stupid. And just walked out, and that was it. So I look back at those things and I just think, you know, I don't know how I did things like that, but you know, that's just one pastime. There's many others that we do. But devotional service should not be like this. We should very quickly become responsible. You know, young devotees tend to do quite, you know, stupid things. I'll tell you some of my pastimes of what I did when I was a young devotee. You know. But we should not be like that. Devotional service to Krishna should be on a very high level. And the guru, his austerity, is he has to accept our service at all of our mistakes and train us and lift us to the actual platform. That's why he's called the Ashraya Vigraha, or the person who accepts our service and takes it to a standard that one day we can actually offer it to Krishna properly. So, any other question or comment?
I've heard it said that chastisement of the disciple is a sign of the disciple's advancement.
Yeah, well, no, the guru will chastise all devotees. He'll chastise neophytes and he'll chastise the more advanced, but Prabhupada says that the advanced disciple, he can take the chastisement of the guru. In other words, he accepts that as mercy. And Prabhupada actually said that him and his godbrothers, they would say that they prefer to get chastised than the praise of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So an advanced devotee, he prefers to be chastised in the sense that he feels that is more beneficial for me, because the praise, when we get praised by the spiritual master or a senior devotee, then that helps us, because then we understand, okay, we're on the right track, we're doing the right thing. Sometimes the guru would, you know, praise us and he would say, you know, this is good, so then you think, okay, that's good, now I'm going in the right direction. But even more beneficial is to get chastised, because then it points out, okay, what you're doing wrong and how you need to improve. So a more advanced devotee, he prefers that. And when you become intimate with the guru, then he may just chastise you. He doesn't feel it, because, you know, in social dealings, usually before you say something heavy to someone, you have to say something palatable first. You know, you see in a cultured society, like in India, generally, they quite often they'll do that. You can say something nice, but you can say however, and then you have to say what needs to be improved. So with a more advanced devotee, the guru doesn't have to do all the nicety. He can just say, you know, give you the chastisement, you take it, and then you respond. And an advanced devotee doesn't become disheartened, whereas a neophyte devotee may become disheartened. Neophyte devotees say one thing and they immediately they get completely mental about the whole thing. But an advanced devotee, he accepts it. No, this is actually good for me. He appreciates it. So. Any other question?
So, when you're still on the neophyte level, you understand that purification must happen so we can become pure in our actions. But in the interim phase, before we actually do get that intense purification of the heart, how do we maintain our enthusiasm to keep going? Because sometimes you see your mountain in front of you, and they look so ugly, you want to run away from it. So how do you actually keep going without feeling like you're the, you know, want to live under the carpet? How do you maintain that enthusiasm to know that, you know, I'm going somewhere?
You go to Rathi Yatra. Because, you know, I was in front of Jagannath during the kirtan, and the kirtan was ecstatic. You know, and we're all dancing, and, like, you know, you get to, like, the furthest you can go at this point in time in terms of your reception of ecstasy from the Lord. So I was there, and I was in the kirtan. I couldn't have been happier. I was dancing, and I was just, like, completely the happiest I could be in Krishna consciousness. And then I looked at Jagannath, and then I thought for a moment, yeah, but in my material life, in my entrapment in this material world, there's so much in there which is going on, and so many defects and so many qualities which you're showing me at this particular point in my life, which is very intense. And then I looked at him and I remembered all that, and then suddenly he just kind of said, anyway, what's the problem? You know, and then it was just overflooded with ecstasy like that. So that is Mahaprabhu's movement. Mahaprabhu's movement is the intensity is there, but then the ecstasy is so powerful it just overwhelms everything. And Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya, at the time of our death, he will overlook all of the defects and he will just take us back to Godhead, like that, if we're sincerely trying. So don't get too caught up in the negativity, like that. It's there, we've all got it, but remain enthusiastic. And the main reason we have to remain enthusiastic is we have to encourage others in devotional service. So we have to be blissful, we have to be enthusiastic. Does that give any clarification?
Also, Krishna.
Yeah, on the platform of Bhava, there's those nine qualities. One is that the devotee feels the most fallen, the other one is that there is the greatest hope, which is there. So it says that Krishna is merciful, Lord Chaitanya is more merciful, and Jagannath is the most merciful. Mm-hmm. Like that. So you take shelter of those particular personalities. You know, we tend to go towards Nityananda Prabhu because he's the most merciful personality. So, is that okay? Okay. Any other points?
This is not for giving mercy. This Aradham to the 5 o'clock crossways.
Harinam Sankirtan, 5 o'clock at Crossways. Harinam Sankirtan ki
jai.
Rathyatra Maha Mahotsava ki
jai.
Going back, coming back to Godhead ki
jai.
Join Nitai Gaur Premanam.